Welcome back to Reads and Deeds 2 on WECB. We're very excited because we're here with Miguel Zanon. Miguel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah, we have some great things coming up. But before we talk about that, what we just heard was a tune called Silencio.
That's right.
So before we get into the actual interview, me asking you some more questions, what is that about? What's the story with that tune?
Silencio is actually a classic sort of Puerto Rican standard song written by a gentleman who's considered to be the most important and relevant musical figure in Puerto Rican history. His name was Rafael Hernandez, and he wrote many different legendary compositions. He lived in the United States and lived in Cuba and Mexico, and is sort of regarded as a Latin American icon as a musician. And this tune, Silencio, is one of his classic sort of standard songs. And we recorded this song on a recent recording called Alma Adentro, which the recording itself served as a tribute to what I like to refer to as a Puerto Rican songbook. A lot of the songs that are sort of legendarily known in Puerto Rico and all over Latin America, and a lot of these composers who are really just amazing figures in the history of Latin American music. And we took these songs and basically adapted these songs into a jazz context. So Silencio is an example of what we were trying to do on this recording.
Great. So I'm going to ask you about the recording now, actually. So Alma Adentro, this came out last year?
It came out
at the end of 2011?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember at Newport, it was just about to come out.
Yeah.
So where did this interest from this interest in Puerto Rican music come from? I was talking to a couple other Puerto Rican jazz musicians earlier today, in fact, and we were talking about it. And they were saying, this came out of, not out of nowhere, but it was kind of a new project. And of course, you're Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
But where does that interest come from to dedicate an album to this?
Well, I'll tell you, this interest in Puerto Rican music itself sort of grew out an interest to learn more about my own roots and to learn more about my country, and just as a general idea, to try to find more grounding for myself as a Puerto Rican. I've been living in the States for a little while, since 96, and since the time that I came here, I basically moved to the States because I wanted to be a jazz musician,
and I wanted to learn
about jazz, I wanted to learn about jazz history, etc. So when I moved here, and I started going to college, and I started playing with people, and learning history, and buying records, and transcribing, and doing all that, I sort of immersed myself in the jazz tradition for a while, basically starting from zero. Before I came here, I had never had any formal jazz education. I had music teachers, but I had never had anyone talk to me about jazz history or jazz harmony, anything. So basically, before I came here, everything I knew, I had learned on my own. And when I came here to Berkeley, I started meeting people and playing with people who were a lot more grounded than I was in the tradition. So I felt that I wanted to find my place in that, and I sort of immersed myself in that. After a while, after a few years of doing that, when I started writing and trying to write my own music, I had this urge to find a voice. Like everybody else, I wanted to have something that would represent me. So I went back to a lot of the music that I had heard as a kid growing up in Puerto Rico, and music in Puerto Rico is a very important part of everyday culture, and it's sort of everybody's exposed to these things in many ways, and I had been exposed to it as a kid, but I wasn't thinking as a musician then. I was thinking as a regular listening, so I wasn't analyzing the music or thinking about it in musical terms. So I basically did that. I went back to this music and started analyzing and studying it as a musician, studying plena music and bomba and jíbaro music and studying the history of it, reading about it, doing interviews with musicians who dedicate their lives to play this music, talking to musicologists, etc. So out of this research, all these ideas and this information that I was gathering started finding a place in my own music, you mm-hmm. know? And eventually I started putting together projects that would focus on a specific aspect of Puerto Rican culture, one being this recording Alma Dentro, which focused on the Puerto Rican songbook, another one being a recording called Esta Plena, which focused on plena music, mm-hmm. which is more coastal music, percussive music, another one called Jíbaro, which focused on music from the rural areas, from the mountains. So this idea of exploring Puerto Rican culture through music is sort of built, I feel that it's built my identity as a composer, you know, as a band leader. I've sort of kind of built my own sort of language coming out of these ideas, which are very folkloric in nature.
So obviously, you've garnered a lot of success. And in the last couple of years especially, a lot of attention, a lot of great things have come to you. A question that I have for you, though, is what door do you think it is that opened that allowed you to have the career that you have now? What was that milestone mm-hmm. moment? What would you say?
It's hard to say. You know, I feel that a lot of the opportunities that have come for me in the last 4 years have kind of come out of relationships mm-hmm. that I've developed by working with other people, and basically not working as a leader, but working in other bands and under other band leaders, and sort of not only learning and gathering experience for that, but, you know, building a resume and building something that you can kind of be representative of, you mm-hmm. know. And I feel that some of the work that I had done before, would be it with David Sanchez or with the SF Jazz Collective or Charlie Hayden or musicians of that stature, has kind of, you know, help for people to know who I am and for people to know, you know, how I play and the kind of stuff that I do. And also, you know, to kind of push me a little bit in terms of being part of what this scene is, you know, which is such a vast thing, really. But it's given me the opportunity to really be able to present my own projects and my own ideas without, you know, kind of feeling that I'm coming out of nowhere, right. You know. So I feel that it's partly, if not mostly, because of that. But, you know, on the other hand, it's really hard to tell with these things, you know. I mean, I think like with anything else, and any kind of thing that's tied to the arts, things kind of come and go in waves, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel that maybe there was something kind of in the air that was already being receptive to the idea that we were trying to work on, and this idea is presenting this folkloric ideas through jazz music and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was something that was already kind of preparing the groundwork for that, but at the end of the day, I don't really know. And really, to be honest, this idea of success, even though it's great and you know, and I really think that it's great that people get to hear the music and people get to be exposed to what we do, is very, very relative, you know. I mean, yeah. I mean the jazz world is so small,
yeah.
And so tiny compared to everything else that's going on, that I feel lucky just to have the opportunity to make a living playing and do what I do, you know. So I know that it could easily be taken away at any moment. You know? So I'm just really, really thankful for the opportunity, and I'm hoping, you know, to keep riding the wave and see where it goes.
Yeah. And of course, with that, we can't not mention the MacArthur. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to that, besides the obvious economic, you know, benefits, right. How else has that affected you and affected your music? What have you been allowed or able to do that you hadn't been able to do before?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think you basically hit it right on the head when you say that what it's allowed me to do, really, aside from all the help, all the financial help and all the financial support that you get from something like this, what it really did for me is that it freed up my time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gave me control over my time to be able to do what I really wanted to do without having to worry about, you know, how am I going to pay for things? How am I going to pay my rent and, you know, take care of my family, etc.
Yeah.
So it really gave me a sort of a grounding where I didn't have to worry about, you know, having to take all the gigs and having to do this and that. I really could do really what I wanted to do. If I wanted to teach, I teach. If I wanted to stay home for a month and write music and practice, I could do that too. If I wanted to go on the road and play duo, I could do that too, you know. And it what it did for me really is just give me the opportunity to be able to do what I wanted to do with my time and able to support projects, you know, like recordings like Alma Dentro, and support research projects like what we did with Esta Plena and some of the other stuff that we've been doing on the side, which would really have been impossible without having this kind of support, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely one of the most important things that has happened to me as an artist, and it's really sort of pushed me to try to get to things that I wouldn't have even dreamed of if this wouldn't have happened. Yeah.
Now, the MacArthur Grant is known as the Genius Grant, they call it. Now, a good friend of mine, who I owe some of these questions to, a saxophonist, Mario Castro, from Puerto Rico as well, says to me, we were talking about this interview, and he said, you know, Miguel is known to pick up songs and to pick up music so fast after just, you know, looking at it once or hearing it once, that he has an amazing ability to, you know, to be able to play it perfectly after that. And he wanted to know, and I wanted to know as well, is this something that you were born with, or did you develop this skill over time? What do you have to say about that? Because apparently it's a hot topic in the in the horn community.
No, I mean it's something that I worked on. You know, I mean I'm sure that there was some kind of thing that you know maybe made it a little easier. But it's working on stuff like that. It does require some work, and it's something that I've put a little work on. It's something that I talk to people a lot, actually, just the idea of internalizing things quickly. And I think a lot of it has to do not only with sort of developing a system, which would be different for everyone, of course, because we're all different, but developing a system to organize things in your mind so you'll be able to memorize them quickly, but also, basically forcing yourself to be exposed to this kind of thing, forcing yourself to memorize things, forcing yourself to play without music, forcing yourself to learn things quickly, and to use your ears before you use, you know, your eyes in this case, you know, to be able to learn with your ears and to be able to learn things sort of in the fly, you know. So a lot of times I put myself in situations where I go, you know, I hear a tune, or I hear people playing a tune, I try to identify the key, I try to identify the meter, the form, stuff like that in my head, almost like as if I was about to be in the situation of having to play that tune. So, you know, so that kind of helps me, you know, push myself, and it helps me prepare for situations like that where, you know, which happen all the time. And I like most people, I really just feel more comfortable not having to play reading sure. music and having to be connected to a piece of paper. So, you know, I try to do it as much as I can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Miguel, we're going to listen to one song, a recording. It's called First Language, I believe.
Yes.
Now, where is this from?
This recording is actually from a performance at Montclair University last year. This is the project that we're going to be performing here next week at NEC on the 22nd. It's a project for a big band. A quartet and multimedia audio and video elements to it too. The project is called Identities Are Changeable: Tales from the Diaspora, and it's all inspired on the idea of national identity, specifically focused on New Yorkers or people who were born in or around New York City who are from Puerto Rican descent, and the idea of what being Puerto Rican means to them. So all this music was kind of inspired by these interviews which come in and out of the pieces, and this piece in particular, First Language, is sort of was written around the idea of what language means to you and which language you connect yourself with. Because by doing this interview, I found that a lot of people that I talked to, even though they were Puerto Rican and they were very proud of that, their Spanish was not very good, and they didn't feel comfortable speaking Spanish, and even with their parents or grandparents who spoke Spanish and not English, they talk about, you know, how that molded their relationship, you know, not being able to communicate with them, or even that relationship forcing them to learn Spanish so they could communicate with some other people in their family. So, you know, the whole idea about the tune is like that, and that's what we're trying to develop here.
Cool. And this will be heard at the concert on the 22nd as well.
That's right. That's one of the tunes that we're going to be playing at the concert.
All right, so let's check it out. This is called First Language. We'll be back with more from Miguel Zanon in just a bit. You're listening to Reads and Deeds 2 on WECB. Welcome back to Reads and Deeds 2 on WECB. We just heard a recording, First Language. It's Miguel Zanon. He's going to be performing the same piece with the New England Conservatory Jazz Orchestra on the 22nd, February 22nd. It is a Friday night at New England Conservatory, Jordan Hall. So, Miguel, what can the audience expect at this performance on the 22nd?
Well, you know, this is a performance that we're going to bring my usual quartet, the guys that have been playing with me for almost 10 years. It's Henry Cole on the drums, Henry Cole, I should say, he's from Puerto Rico, Luis Perdomo on the piano, and Hans Levichnik on the bass. We have been playing these tunes for a while as a quartet, even before we started playing it with the big band. This is only the third time that we're going to play this project.
Wow.
As it is with the video elements and with the big band elements to it. And this is actually the first time that we play it with a student big band, so we're actually really excited about that.
Cool.
I've been teaching here at NEC for the last 3 years, and I know a lot of the students are going to be playing. I know the level here is very high, and I'm not really worried about it at all, but I'm really excited, you know, to be able to play the music with them, and I've been, you know, working on the music with them and some of the lessons and stuff like that. So this project, as I was saying before, is a series of pieces all inspired by the idea of national identity, and in this case Puerto Rican identity. And all this music was written around a series of interviews that touch on these elements and these ideas. And the interviews, the video and audio clips from the interviews are meant to interact with the music. So there are multimedia elements of video and audio, and also a video installment that are happening at the same time as we play the pieces.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a great show.
Hopefully.
Yeah, yes. I have no doubt, for sure. So Miguel, before I let you go, what are some of the future plans that you've got coming up?
Well, right now I'm actually...
Besides everything, I'm sure you're all over the place.
A little bit busy, yeah. I mean, I'm doing some concerts with my quartet for the rest of the month. And then in March, I'm going to be touring with the SF Jazz Collective, a group that I've been playing for the last 9 years, and it's a really, really great project. In April, I'm going to be touring Europe with another project that I did recently called Rayuela, which is based on a book by Julio Cortázar, the great Argentine writer. And then in May, I'm going to release another recording, a recording that I sort of self-produced with a group called the Rhythm Collective. It's a group that is all made out of all Puerto Rican musicians. Myself, Tony Escapa on the drums, Aldemar Valentin on bass, and Reynaldo de Jesus on percussion. And it's a recording that was actually made live in Puerto Rico.
Cool.
So we're excited about that, and we're going to be doing some playing with that band in May and also in the fall. So, you know, a lot of things coming
great.
Up.
Great. Yeah. Well, we're definitely looking forward to that recording. And yeah, this is great, Miguel. So thank you so much. And we're looking forward to the performance on the 22nd.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? Any last words to get the audience there? Which I know it'll be packed anyway.
Not really. I mean, we're very, very excited about this. And we're hoping that people will come out and not only support live music, but support this great organization and the great orchestra that they've been able to put here, put together here. And, you know, very happy to be part of this and be part of this show. I want to thank you again for having me, and hopefully I'll be back soon.
Oh, I hope so too. All right. The Miguel Zanon, again, thank you very much. We're going to close up our segment with a tune from Esta Plena. Would you like to pronounce it for me? Because, you know, you'd think my Spanish would be better at this point, but I don't want to make a fool of myself.
Yeah, of course. This tune is named after a very, very sort of very famously musical neighborhood in San Juan and Santurce, and this is called Villa Palmeras.
All right. You're listening to Reads and Deeds 2 on WECB. More music to follow, and enjoy.